San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
Lots of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night out to the desert. And we are also heard on 760kfmb.com. And we are also, you can hear these podcasts at iymoney.com. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He is a CPA extraordinaire. He is a marathon runner. He is a family office advisor to several high net worth families. He's a best-selling author. And did I leave anything out? Richard Muzio, good evening. How are you tonight?
That's some of it, Joe. I'm doing well, thanks.
Good. Well, we've got a terrific show tonight, and actually,
it's a veritable potpourri.
It is. We've got celebrities galore, and on the line right now, we have the daughter of one of the probably most famous actors ever to come out of La Jolla in San Diego, and one of the best and most beloved actors of all time, Gregory Peck. We have Cecilia Peck on the line. Cecilia, how are you tonight?
Hi, good evening.
Hey, it's so great to have you in town. I know you are over at the Arclight Theaters in at UTC, and you are premiering your film down here in San Diego. I know you're a documentary filmmaker. And what can you tell us about Brave Miss World in a nutshell?
Did you ask me to describe Brave Miss World in a nutshell?
Correct.
Brave Miss World is the story of Lenore Abarjil, a beauty queen who was raped violently at knife point right before she competed in the Miss World competition. And when, to her shock, she won the crown of Miss World, she vowed to herself to one day speak out about rape. And it's her journey of fighting for justice and reaching out to other survivors to encourage them not to stay silent.
Wonderful, wonderful. So it's so great to have you in San Diego. When were you here last, as a little girl?
Well, I do have roots here. My father was from La Jolla. He mm-hmm. went to San Diego State. He returned wow. here throughout his life. He was actually the founder of the La Jolla Playhouse. And as kids, he brought us down to the La Jolla Beach and Tennis Club many mm-hmm. times for family vacations. So I have a lot of, strong feelings about San Diego, and I'm so glad to be showing the film here tonight. I'm so glad that San Diego Film Festival has programmed it.
Yeah, that is terrific. And I know you'll be at a reception later tonight down at the Hotel Palomar. Is that right downtown at 9 o'clock, something like that?
Yes. Filmmaker event at the Palomar.
Well, hopefully some fans will come down and meet with you. And let's see. So your film it's been screening around in some other film festivals, correct?
Yes, we're playing in festivals right now. Mm-hmm. We're premiering theatrically in Los Angeles and New York in November, and November in Los Angeles, December in New York, and hopefully around the country. And then it'll be followed by TV broadcast. I think, the film is really a journey of hope and healing. It's mm-hmm. You come out of it feeling that you can survive a trauma. It's not just about the trauma of rape, but really transforming yourself when you have mm-hmm. experienced something traumatic. And our central character is such a beauty and so inspiring. And I think, we're all touched by this subject one way or another.
And what is Lenore doing these days? Is she still going around speaking around the world, or mostly staying there?
She lives in Tel Aviv. She was mm-hmm. Miss Israel who became Miss World, and she mm-hmm. She has become a lawyer. She's defending other women. She's speaking publicly, and she really believes the way that you make a difference is in seeking justice. But she wants to let people know, police. In the legal system, that when someone arrives in your office and makes a report, that you give them credibility. You mm-hmm. say, I want to hear you, I want to support you, instead of dismissing it, which is what survivors often face and why they're so afraid to seek justice.
Yeah. Anyway, Cecilia, it's so wonderful to speak with you. We'll have you back again down here. We'll have you over at the La Valencia Hotel, and we'll spend a whole half hour with you whenever we can get the next chance and opportunity. How's that sound?
Would love that, and I hope that anyone who's interested will visit bravemissworld.com.
Wonderful. That's a great idea. All right, thank you, Cecilia, and I hope to see you later on tonight after the show, okay?
Okay,
and I
want to meet your husband, Dan.
Okay, my dear. Talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay,
bye,
bye-bye. Joe. Bye-bye. Wow, that was pretty cool. Gregory Peck's
daughter. Good stuff. Good stuff.
And now we have in studio, to complete this segment tonight, some true disclosure, I've known this gentleman probably 30 years or approximately. So, but anyone who's listened to news or a political news junkie or pays attention to TV news or whatnot, this gentleman, he's been covering San Diego since 1982. For 25 of those years, he's focused on consumer and investigative reporting. He worked with Bree Walker, a good friend of mine, and also current council member Marty Emerald, who used to be a consumer reporter many years ago. He has more than 125 awards from organizations like the National Press Club, Investigative Reporters and Editors, Society of Professional Journalists, National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences.
Joe, we only go to 8 o'clock.
Everybody, oof. I'd like to. We are excited to have with us J.W. August tonight. How are you, J.W.?
Oh, nice. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
It's our absolute pleasure. We do go back quite a long way, but you know what? I never really found out where you grew up and, born and raised and how you found your way to San Diego. So how about that?
I was a military brat and lived all over the world, actually, which is great training for a journalist, but I would call Virginia my home before I came to California.
Hmm.
And I ended up in San Diego because I hated Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you tried that for a while?
Or? Oh, 9 miserable years.
Where'd you work up there?
I worked at KCOP. Was my first TV job up there.
Doing
on Willoughby and La Brea,
Doing news producing?
Or? No, I was actually in the programming end. That's my first job was in programming.
Huh, never knew that. Interesting. Yeah. So all 9 years at KCOP or?
Oh, no, I did a bunch of stuff in L.A., whatever it took. I moved furniture. I worked as a painter. I did tons of stuff.
I know our friend Jack White started up there at NBC Burbank. He was
right.
On TV News
He was before. A page, I think, wasn't he?
I'm not sure
he was
about
a
that.
Page.
Perhaps. But, I mean, his first news job was NBC Burbank. I remember he covered a horrific, bloody homicide, his first gig. So it was, It's not an easy job. So you moved down here in 82, and then did you immediately start working with Bree Walker? Or is that...
No, I worked at KPBS for a while. I got my degree from San Diego State. Mm-hmm. I graduated from the same school as Gregory Peck.
That's amazing.
Whoa, go State. Boy, what a great football game last night. Hot dog. They're back on track.
Okay, so you went to San Diego State.
Yeah, and I worked at KPBS, and I moved into operations then. I thought I wanted to, like you do here with the knobs and the dials, and that wasn't for me. So I got a job as a freelancer for newspapers and the wire services for the AP and UP. Used to be the UPI.
Mm-hmm.
Just getting any kind of work I could get.
And then
I fell in love with journalism.
And then stumbled your way over to Channel 10 there, right?
I actually broke a pretty big story, and they were impressed
what
with
was the
fact.
Story? What was that story?
Well, Bill Cleater was my tipster. Remember him?
Oh, yeah.
He was on the city council.
Point Loma council member.
And
sure.
He was a pretty good guy. I'll always owe him for this. And the big deal is what was going to happen? Where was the Navy going to put the hospital? The big, huge hospital.
Oh, yeah.
In
Florida Canyon.
Yeah, right. Well, that was in talking stages then, and the city already knew what the deal was. So Cleater gave me the tip, and that tip convinced Channel 10 to hire me because I had it before anybody in the city. And I suddenly realized, boy, finding out stuff before anybody else is pretty cool.
So who hired you over at Channel 10?
A guy named Jim Ryman.
Oh, rest his soul. He was an inspiration for many, many people. So, but it was a totally different ball game then. How has news changed from then till now? Quite a bit, wouldn't you say?
I was a one-trick pony when I came in. I could write, and I could write. Mm-hmm. And now the students, we always tell kids that are in the newsroom, interns, that they need to do all of it. They need to edit, they need to write, they need to be able to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do it all. You got to write for the internet, you got to write for broadcast.
Yeah.
So it requires a great deal more of diversity.
And it's got more technology
well,
today.
Well, the internet,
I remember the days people don't know this, but the teleprompter back in the old days, folks, the guys like JW would type up. How many copies you guys would make? Like six.
Pikotype.
But I mean, it was like everyone had a typewriter, and
right.
You'd make like six copies at once. And
right.
One would go
tear them.
Yeah.
And then tape them.
Yeah.
Tear and tape.
Somebody would tape them all together, and they had like this little conveyor belt, and that's what would flash before the newscaster.
Right. And the anchors would read it.
And.
There's a lady at Channel 10 that still do it, Ginny Crate. She's been there forever, and she could tear and tape faster than any human being I ever saw.
These are 8.5 by 11 pages, folks, and you've got to tape like 20 of these things, these suckers together.
In a hurry, too, baby.
And you better get them right, or Harold Green will have some words with you. So,
Mr. Green, yes.
Anchorman. Now, and a lot of people don't know this. Anchorman was based on Harold Green, Ron Burgundy.
Ron Burgundy.
Is he still alive? Is Harold still alive? He's still with us. Okay, I'm not going to talk about it.
I saw him at Captain Mike's Memorial.
Right. I know. I'm just kidding. Yeah.
But, no, that's true. And Jack White was a consultant on that film.
And I know a long story behind that, but that's too long for tonight.
And I think I watched that film with Bree Walker in the back. We were cackling like two little high school kids in the
great.
Back. But
I love it. I still have my bobbleheads from that.
Hey, with that, I think we're going to take our first break. But we'll be right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life live from La Vie, La Valencia, after this. Hang on.
Live from the La Valencia Hotel, it's Your Money and Your Life on AM 760 KFMB.
Oh, I'm with you. All right, we're back at live from La Vie, It's Your Money and Your Life, with the great J.W. August. He's been a stalwart in the Channel 10 newsroom for 30 years. He's senior investigative reporter, managing editor, does it all. And he has some favorite stories. So,
what is the most favorite story of all time, JW?
Well, the one I did that nobody even pays attention to was the when I found out that we had a King of the Gypsies in San Diego, the Marks family. Yeah,
yeah, Marks family.
And Big Mike was his name. And I just I got there was a cop that worked in fraud that had spent a lot of years tracking the gypsy crimes, and you have to have some experience in covering them, and he took time to explain how it works and what to look for, and I began chasing the story.
Was this one, were you working with Bree Walker at the time? Or
I did these stories over the years with different people. I may have done some with Bree.
Ted Drakos?
Ted on that. No. But Ted was actually the first investigative reporter I worked with.
But anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt you, King of the Gypsies.
No problem. Anyway, it was interesting. If you ever go down 5 South, and in the National City, and you see the big palm reading sign off to your left. You ever seen that big sign? That was Big Mike's place.
Oh, okay. Huh.
And that tied to all the parlors in the city. They're all the same family.
What kind of parlors were these?
Gypsy. There was one here on Prospect for years
gypsy
when you came
parlors.
Right when you came into La Jolla.
Palm reading, Joe.
Oh, palm reading.
Palm reading.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But we have different kinds of parlors, which I just want to clarify.
Oh.
So.
This is palm reading. Okay.
I've done stories on those kind of parlors too, and I couldn't use the video.
The old hidden cam trick.
Yes, indeed.
Give this man a hand. Anyway, we're talking about palm reading.
So palm reading. Get back.
Well, anyway, it was very intriguing. Where they came from, this family actually came here from Kansas City after World War II, and they kind of just spread out and controlled everything. If you came in from out of town and the Marks found out about it, you'd be told to leave. But they have divisions within the family, and they're always fighting. And but the culture is amazing.
So what did you bust them for? What was the big story?
It was the same story over and over. They would target young Hispanic women. They use a lot of religious icons. They convince them they've done something wrong in their lives, or maybe their father just died.
I'll get money from them? Or
that's how they would do it.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Then they do a lot of sleight of hand stuff. It was interesting. They're still in town.
It was like a cult.
Very interesting.
They
people.
Ought to just
love
you know,
talking to them.
They just ought to have everyone come on Sunday and get the money all at once like some other folks do. But anyway.
It's easier.
Yeah, but the problem is you have to listen to a sermon, necessarily easier.
But anyway, JW, so we know news has changed a lot. It's gotten more technical. Are you more positive?
It's a lot quicker.
Yeah, are you more positive and optimistic about it, or is it just a matter of changing? We all know that ownership of news and generally in the country has gotten more concentrated.
Right.
Basically five sources for national news now out there. When Reagan was president, it was about 80, 60 or 80.
Oh, it has concentrated for sure. And that's, but the good thing is the internet is even the playing field.
Well, we hope.
Multiple sources of information.
I know, but
so much of that's not really accurate information.
No, I know. That's why you need journalists.
Yeah.
Because the journalist can be your gatekeeper even then.
Right.
You go to websites you trust. You go to the New York Times.
Yeah.
You go to 10news.com.
Several sources.
Right. But you don't. You know, you don't always go to some of the wackier blogs and stuff like that.
Right, right, right. But anyway, well, where do you see our city these days? I mean, we've got a heated election coming up. There's, you're saying it's pretty, a lot of back
channel stuff going on.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting. I really do think right now Fletcher's got his odds on favorite, I think. He's polling well. He's higher than everybody else in the race.
I've got to congratulate you. All the polls that you guys have run, Channel 10, Survey USA, have been very, very accurate. I remember from the last primary and the final. I mean, you guys were maybe 1 or 2 points off on in every candidate.
Go back 10 years, and they are pretty close. They're 3.5% plus or minus,
and they're using cell phones these days as well as landlines.
So that doesn't limit the audience. You know that the issue of the UT did a poll and they didn't use cell phones in the poll, so it eliminated a certain demographic.
Yes,
which is 110% of the population.
Right, exactly. you got to use all those methods.
Yeah. Now you've got new ownership of your news channel now, the Scripps folks, right?
Out of Cincinnati.
Yeah. Has anything changed at all?
They embrace the investigative culture, which is what I really am still in the business for, because I enjoy investigative reporting, and they really do embrace it.
Now, you must have a ton of sources out there, huh?
I got some nice Rolodex.
You have several.
I've got some of these young writers come in, you know, new hires, and they look at the Rolodex and say, what is that? I mean, they're big, too, man. These
you still
things
have
are like,
them?
Oh, I got three.
You got Rolodexes?
On my Dexes. Yeah.
Really? Oh, my God.
Wow.
But, you know, when they're looking for a number, they come over to see me, and I give them a little, you know what, because they look. This is a Rolodex. I'm going to look it up in this Rolodex. It never disappears. It never runs out of electricity. And it's always with you.
You going to put those in the Smithsonian someday?
They look like it.
But we had great fun back at Channel Time. I mean, we played softball. You know, is that still going on at all? Softball with the
not anymore.
We had
not
a media
anymore.
League, and we had some great. I remember we met. We had the JCC All Stars, Jewish Community Center, and who was the?
Is that like the House of David? Or?
Yeah. Who was the big man benefactor? I forget. He was 95 at the time. Come on, you know.
Larry Lawrence?
No, not Larry Lawrence, the other fellow.
The guy that couldn't bury?
His name started with an M. Oh, gosh. But anyway, he showed up, and Jerry G. Bishop, rest his soul, he pitched for our team. They gave us these T-shirts. We had a wonderful celebrity softball game. And I'll tell you another one, the San Ysidro Massacre. When that happened at McDonald's in 84, I believe, we went down there and had a big benefit softball.
Right, I remember that. Them.
And Lenderman and you and Bob Donnelly.
Joe, what position did you play?
I think I played outfield mostly, but
JW, how about you?
He was a short fielder. No, I was third base.
He was third base. That's right.
Knock him down, baby.
And he hit the dirt on every ground ball. He was
even if it was the first base, they hit the dirt.
The dirt. Okay. Got to get that uniform dirty, man.
Yeah.
But anyway, who's the news director these days?
Joel Davis.
Joel Davis.
He's been there about 3 years.
Three years. Okay.
And our general manager is Jeff Block.
Right.
And he came from the Fox station up in the Bay Area.
Gotcha. And then how's Carol LeBeau doing, by the way? I know
she's doing pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah, she's doing good. She speaks a lot. She goes all over the country and talks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
I worry about Lauren and Carol. You know, Lauren was
of course.
Her.
Yeah.
A weather guy and really a terrific guy, and he's having struggling with cancer,
brain tumor. But
I don't know if you see his blog.
I do.
Oh, you read that thing and you go, oh my gosh, this is just
tough
stuff to read.
He's got good family support and a lot of tons of folks supporting him as well. So we wish him nothing but the best. So, but
JW, advice for a young person who wants to go in your business?
You got to really want it. Don't expect to make a lot of money off the top.
Kind of just like this business, Jim.
Right. You got to do your dues. And
well, actually, the money isn't what it used to be, even for the the top anchors and everybody.
I mean,
it's gotten so diluted.
They were making $1 million in our market at one time.
Were they
in our market?
Yes, they
not
were.
Anymore.
No.
Wow.
Whole newsroom for that now, I suppose.
Yeah. Boy, things have certainly changed.
Yep.
So, but anyway, how much time do we have left there, Justin? I'm not sure on the... Okay, good. We got 1 minute left, JW. So any closing thoughts you'd like to leave us with? Anything?
Well, just don't forget. I mean, we're journalists ranked right there with used car salesmen and trust in the public. But it's always interesting to see that when something hits the fan, they come to us and they talk to us. So never forget that one reason we have a democracy is because we have a strong a journalism community, a free press, and that's vital anytime you have a democracy.
Yeah. Well, you guys do a great job. You know, you try to be above board and as down the line as possible. And we appreciate that. JW, great having you with us.
Thanks, guys.
We're going to take our break now, and we'll be right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life and Leo Klein right after this. Hang on.
Live from the La Valencia Hotel, it's Your Money and Your Life on AM 760 KFMB.
All right, we are back live from La V. It's Your Money and Your Life. Over to Richard Nucio to thank our wonderful sponsors.
Thanks to our wonderful sponsors. Hey, I want to mention one other thing. I went to Bill Gladstone's book signing, The Power of 12. He was a guest a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
The Power of 12. Check that out or Google it. Great book.
The same day our library was dedicated downtown.
Exactly.
It was
so
wonderful.
That was fun stuff. But anyway, thank you to lovely La V. We are live from La V. Couldn't do it without you guys here at La Valencia. The Cafe La Rue is going to open sometime pretty soon. Maybe.
November.
It's November.
Mm-hmm.
Of what year? No, I'm just kidding. Of this year. UBS with Mr. Michael Carrancha and Drew Freitas, thank you very much. Rich Gaines, Family Legacy Legal, Estate Planning Attorney. Our favorite CFO service, Jason Kruger, CPA with Signature Analytics. Sean Puckett and Steve Sefton with San Diego's best business bank. That would be Regions Bank, right across the street from La Valencia Hotel. Pulido Epic CPAs, Don Epic and Paul Pulido, as they crawl towards the finish line of October 15th. With the government in shutdown and nobody in sight working for the IRS. Good luck, you guys.
And my birthday, by the way.
But are you October 15th?
That's correct.
Hey.
Anyway.
Happy birthday, Joe.
We have a lot to celebrate.
Yeah, a lot to celebrate. Next week's guest, Joel Grushkin and Kurt Gautreaux with Cost Segregation Initiatives. Maybe we'll do a cost seg study on this hotel live on air next week. That will be exciting.
Let's do it.
Help real estate owners save tons and tons of money, improve their cash flow. And last but not least, my good buddy Carl Sheeler with Business Valuations Limited, helping business owners improve the value of their business or businesses. And Joe, how can our wonderful listeners find out more about our wonderful sponsors?
Well, if they get on iymoney.com, and click on the sponsors tab, they're all there. All their information, their bios, their contact information is there, and they're all tops and professional in their field.
They are. There's a real cool new thing on the iymoney.com website. There's an icon that says Book Richard to Speak. So if you're looking for a great speaker, I've got all kinds of things I can regale you with.
That's right, about the whole Billie Jean King Bobby Riggs thing that you
and many
covered,
other things.
That you covered as a young reporter 40 years ago.
I was a very young reporter at the age of 14, 40 years ago.
Keeping scrapbooks for Bobby Riggs, and the rest is history, as they say. But how about time to introduce our guest for the second half of the show?
We will, and I did Business Valuations Limited, Carl Sheeler's company, as our sponsor last, because this is a good segue into Mr. Leo Klein, who is what we call an M&A guy.
Mm-hmm.
And no, that's legal.
Mm-hmm.
Leo, what's an M&A guy do?
An M&A guy helps business owners get out of their business. And it means either selling the business or developing an exit strategy.
Okay, and that's a very valuable thing to do, because it's really, there's a saying, it's really easy to get into business, but it's really hard to get out of it. How does somebody, tell us about your background, how does somebody get into this business of helping business owners with something quite so esoteric?
Well, I used to be a business owner myself for, I guess, 10 years prior to getting into this business, and made probably all the mistakes that you can possibly make along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Had I known then what I know now, I would have done a few things differently.
Don't we all?
Well, that's the value of experience. I tell people all the time, we only learn by making mistakes. Nobody ever learned anything by doing it right the first time.
But you know what? There's nothing wrong with making a mistake, is there? I mean, that's the way we succeed, by failing.
What kind of business did you own, and what was your experience trying to get out of it?
My business, I was involved in a software business that me and a friend of mine, we started. He was in Europe, I was in Asia, and it was essentially a software business that allowed retail buyers to link up with their buying offices in the Far East and exchange product information using modern technology. Now, remember, this was in the early 90s.
So you were maybe...
Where there was no internet yet.
You were asking to say you were a market leader, but you were maybe before your time?
We were, pioneers, true pioneers. We taught people how to hook up a computer to a telecommunications network and needed to remind them to dial in and not forget it every day.
Sure. Interesting. Huh. So, in other words, you guys saw that business was going to become global 20 years ago.
We did. We were, on three continents. We couldn't get the company financed in Europe or in Asia, so we ended up creating a company here in the States, raising some money, buying a shell on NASDAQ, and becoming an internet play in 1999-2000.
And you were based in France back then?
At that time, initially I was based in Asia, in Hong Kong, and in 1997 I moved to the States.
So did that story have a good ending or not such a good ending?
The story has a very interesting ending. We were on the verge of, creating the marketplace for retail when the business-to-business was in full swing.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a technology partnership with Microsoft, the world's second largest retailer, as our client, and who had committed to hook up their 50,000 vendors using our system as a subscription-based service. We hired an investment bank, and we're raising $100 million, and we're doing the roadshow. And then Mr. Larry Ellison decided that he wanted to get into our space. And he made an announcement. And
Mr. Oracle.
Mr. Oracle. And we learned on a conference call with Wall Street with the CEO and the CIOs of three big companies, one of them being Carrefour, our largest client, where they announced that they were partnering with Larry Ellison. And there was one analyst from Citibank who asked the question, what happened with that announcement you made a couple of months ago about this company sourcing link that was doing the software business. And
their answer was, what announcement?
We had a long-standing and fruitful relationship with the company, and we'll examine how to best involve them in this new endeavor.
Okay.
And that ended with sort of a settlement agreement.
Sure.
And where the small company out of San Diego decided that they didn't want to sue a company doing $100 billion in revenues. So from one day to the next, we were in the consulting business. And guess what they asked us to consult on?
Help them run the
marketplace developed by Oracle.
And did you do it?
And we did it.
Yeah. Okay.
We paid for it. So.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then I guess it worked out.
So
it
has a pretty happy ending. Pretty happy ending. Except you could have been the next Larry Ellison.
Is Oracle still the primary?
Joe, take some notes. We want to get Larry on the show. I want to see if all of this is convicted grabber.
He's quite the guy. I know when Steve Jobs passed, he got interviewed quite a bit.
I never met him, but I did meet Branson.
Okay. Well, we'll work on it. We've had some big stars and celebs here. We got Leo here. And we just had Cecilia Peck on, for God's sake. So.
Yeah. That's an interesting story.
But
Leo, are you going to be... How long did you consult for? I'm just curious. I mean, how long does something like that take when you're trying to create something that's never existed before?
Well, particularly if you ended up consulting on a product from Oracle that was announced but not necessarily market ready.
Right.
So it took a year just to get the product ready. And then we consulted another sort of 2 years on rolling out the solution and teaching over 2,000 buyers how to use it in their negotiations with their vendors.
Mm-hmm.
Around the world. We train buyers in China, in France, in Spain, in Brazil, Argentina, and a couple other countries.
Wow, interesting.
Well, this gentleman's fluent in six languages, Richard.
I know that. Leo, I need to say this. Leo is one of the great contributors to STAR San Diego, Strategic Trusted Advisors Roundtable. There are many, many things we wouldn't have accomplished without Leo's expert assistance, trust me.
Wonderful.
So, Leo, I'll thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
With 50,000 watts of power behind it. Thank you.
And we're harnessed to the web, too. So... There you go.
So, you're surrounded by star guys, Joe. You're sitting here with stars.
Well, we should tell folks that website because,
star-sandiego.com. Check out the website and come on out to a meeting. I think anybody who...
It is Strategic Trusted Advisors
Roundtable. I think every professional in town, I think, could really, really benefit to coming out to STAR luncheons and breakfasts because
absolutely.
The people you meet, the connections you make, the relationships you develop,
mm-hmm.
it's all about collaboration. So, Leo, I know you're going to be speaking soon in Las Vegas, right?
That's correct.
What are you going to be talking about?
I'm going to be talking about the 10 biggest mistakes that business owners make when they own a business. And when you sort of, you know, let me position that a little bit. When I talk about business owners, we sort of play in what we call the lower middle market.
Okay.
Business is doing sort of 10 to 15 million in revenues.
So 10 to 550 million of revenue?
That's correct.
Okay.
And sort of you're talking about, you know, EBITDA, probably half a million up to a couple of million. So it's...
So EBITDA being cash flow for my less informed listeners.
Okay. That's right. That's right.
Okay. And are there more of those kinds of businesses in existence than, say, 10, 20 years ago, or are there fewer? I mean, what's going on with that middle market space?
It's, you know, so many people call it the backbone of the economy. There are still just probably between 5 and 6 million businesses in that space, so it is very, very significant.
Yeah, I mean, the things I read, it, depending on whose math you believe, it employs somewhere between 60 and 70% of the people who are employed in this country, those kinds of businesses, all the way down to sole proprietor.
Right. Now here's the scary part. So, 60 to 65% of all these businesses are owned by baby boomers or older.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
So there's going to be a tremendous amount of transitions taking
place. Right,
we
sometimes call that succession planning. That is to say, moving a business to its next stage beyond, say, the first stage with the first owners.
Can I do some succession planning right now, though?
Because you want to succeed into some commercials?
I want to take a little break now, but we'll be back with our last segment and get into these 10 big mistakes right after this. Hang on. All right, we're back in the home stretch here with It's Your Money and Your Life, live from Lavi, over to Richard and our guest Leo Klein.
So, Leo, before we get into some of the biggest mistakes, oh, and by the way, Joe, we are the award-winning It's Your Money and Your Life, live from Lavi, but we're not going to tell anybody what the award is yet, but it's a big deal. You got to keep listening every week, because by October 29th,
we will know.
We can disclose.
Well, it was from the San Diego Press Club.
It's San Diego Press Club.
Right.
Yeah, so this is the major leagues. But anyway, Leo, before we talk about some of the biggest mistakes that businesses and their owners can make, how can our listeners get a hold of you? Website and phone number, email?
Simple as just go to the website, henberger.com, H-E-N-B-E-R-G-E-R.com.
Henberger.com, okay.
And you'll find, you know, contact details and bios and everything.
Perfect.
Okay. And people can also get to Leo Klein, K-L-I-J-N, Leo's bio on the www.star-sandiego website.
Okay.
He's up there. So, Leo. A lot of people own their own business. To me, there's always been a couple of kinds of businesses. There's businesses that I call business-first businesses, and then others that I call family-first or lifestyle-first businesses. What are important things for people to understand about when they really are serious about trying to increase the value of their business?
Well, first and foremost, I think they should start considering their business not just as a means to earn a living, but start considering it as an asset and one of the assets that they own in an asset portfolio. And they should start to look at, you know, returns that they're getting on the assets compared with the other asset classes that they may own, and look at it at a holistic perspective. And slowly also not necessarily stay emotionally involved with the business, but start looking at it more as a financial asset.
Okay, so that's a good point, because a lot of people think, well, my business makes me $100,000 a year, and so that's a decent living, but they don't realize that they might be able to sell that business someday for a certain value that goes beyond just what the annual income is, correct?
Absolutely. The way I always talk to business owners is you wear two hats. You wear an employee hat, and you spend your hours in the business. You need to be paid a market salary for that effort. And if, as you just said, the market salary is $100,000 and it's all you make, then you're not being rewarded for wearing the second hat, which is being the investor and taking the risk. And so you want to make sure that you get compensation for both roles that you play in the business.
And how does risk play into the value of building value in a business, or risk, or risks in general? I mean, because a lot of people think about the cash flow or the value of the business as a certain multiple times the cash flow, but how does risk play into that determination?
Well, the way I always explain it, and by trying to not be esoteric about business valuations, is to say business value is simply a cash flow times a multiple equals the value, and the multiple is the factor that expresses risk. So, as an example, the multiple will go down if you are dependent on one client for 50% of your revenues.
Mm-hmm.
If you have no client doing more than 5% of your revenues, the multiple will be a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm.
If you are running the business as the owner, You don't have a management team that is can run the business without you. The multiple will go down. If you can go on a vacation for 6 weeks and the business just that's fine, that means that the multiple will go up.
Okay, so the multiple really represents risk or the different risks that are associated with particular businesses. So let's assume that we have somebody who's doing a fairly good job of running a business that's making money. It does have some value, potentially somewhere down the road to be sold. What things do business owners have to think about? Because I would imagine you might manage a company a little bit differently when you get to the point where you say in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, I think maybe I want to go public, sell this, do something.
I think there's sort of two key factors that people need to look at. One is what I would call financial readiness. What is, you know, what does good look like in terms of a financial result? How much money would I want to get out of this thing? And it's not what it is worth, but how much do I get to keep?
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to understand the dynamics because it, you know, can vary greatly depending on the setup.
Mm-hmm.
And the second factor that they need to consider is what I call mental readiness. What is, you know, what will life look like for you once you're no longer working in that business? What are you going to do? And it's sort of, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I'll play golf, I'll travel, or I'll spend more time with, you know, with the kids or the grandkids. That's probably not the right answer. There needs to be something meaningful that is going to replace the time that you're spending on the job. And amazing how few people really think about it, and, you know, and how many deals fall apart at the last minute. Because people don't want to sign on the dotted line because they're afraid on what they're going to do tomorrow.
Funny story, I had a client who sold a very successful business many years ago. I won't mention any names or anything because this is funny, but I got to keep it really, really private. And a lot of money. And about a year later, I said, hey, how are things going now that you're a free man? You can do whatever you want. He goes, oh, this is miserable. I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, nobody told me I had to spend a lot of time now with my wife and kids.
You're absolutely right. There has been research done on this very topic, and the majority of people that sell businesses are, you know, not satisfied with life after business exactly because.
So you're saying over 50%, if you interviewed them a year or two after their say their big liquidity or sale event, they would say that they're not satisfied. And you're saying that's not per se to do with the financial terms they agree to, but rather other qualitative things.
It's life and what it, you know, who they are, what they're doing with their time, and even for some, who they are in society. You know, they're retired, so
Some of them have been married to that business for so long they haven't developed any other interest in life, and it's probably a traumatic thing for a lot of people. So, but it's like when some of these lottery winners, they their lives go down the tubes after winning a lottery. It's probably somewhat analogous,
How important is it to select the right advisors? Because, you know, you were listening to our sponsors, valuations, CPAs, attorneys, et cetera.
Well, I believe that every business owner should have a business plan, that the most important chapter in the business plan is the exit plan, and everybody should have one. And the only way to successfully execute an exit plan is to have a team of advisors that's working with the owner to make it happen. The reality is you're going to need the business attorney, you're going to need the estate attorney, you're going to need the CPA, you're going to need some sort of a transaction advisor depending on what type of transaction you're going to do. So all these people need to, none of these advisors know it all, so you're going to need the expertise from each one of them, and they need to work together as a team, ideally with one of them playing sort of the quarterback to move the ball forward at all times. And the owner should not be the quarterback.
Oh, I agree with that. The owner should not be the quarterback. Yeah, I 100% agreement with that. So the businesses you work with in this $10 to $50 million space, how easy or hard is it to access capital these days, whether it's lending capital or actual equity capital?
And we have about a minute to
you
go.
You've got one minute to answer that, my friend.
It's still not easy. And things have loosened up a little bit, but it's still tough.
Mm-hmm.
You think that might change sometime soon or not? What are you seeing? I mean, are the owners of these companies optimistic, pessimistic?
I think, you know, everybody is cautiously optimistic. I think it's getting a little better.
Good.
But it's still expensive.
Well, let's all remain cautiously optimistic. And Leo Klein, thank you so much for being our guest tonight. Henberger.com if you want to reach him. Richard Musio.
Also, thanks to JW. And before that, Cecilia Peck.
Absolutely.
We have a lot of people
JW Channel 10. And also, we have to thank Craig Blanke, our con executive, in the over at the studio, Justin Hart, our sound engineer, making us sound terrific. And also
LaVie, Mark LaBella. Don't forget Mark.
Mark LaBella, LaVie. Hey, the Heavenly Hog, a pig out here, coming up October 11th. Get on LaValencia.com and get over here. It's going to be phenomenal. And thanks to Dave Smith, our programming genius. Folks, you have a great week. We'll be back next week with Joel Grushkin, correct, Richard?
Joel Grushkin, Kirk Cattrall, Cost Segregation Initiative. We'll make a lot of money next Saturday.
All right. We're riding out of here. Magnificent Seven, folks. Have a good night. Have a good week. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.